Accession number 20373, reel 1.
Bert Beddoes, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Southport, on the 22nd of August, 1922.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Southport?
Yes, I went to the local junior school at St John's in Birkdale, in Sandon Road, Birkdale. It has now been pulled down and there's a nice little housing estate on the plot.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I was 14 years of age.
So that would have been in 36?
That's correct.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I went in as an apprentice cabinet maker. The big thing then for working class people, the son of the house must have a trade rather than go labouring and whatnot. So I went as an apprentice cabinet maker. And I did that for about 11 months. And during that time, I don't know about cabinet making, I did a little bit of sandpapering, but the main part of my occupation was pushing handcarts to every corner of Southport. In fact, today, I think if a horse was asked to pull or push the handcarts that I pushed and pulled, full of timber, I think the owner would be up for cruelty. That's how hard they worked us. And may I say, in those days, I got 6 shillings per week for a 48-hour week.
Did you feel discontented?
Pardon?
Did you feel discontented?
Well, I didn't feel that I was, doing my job. As a matter of fact, I did feel discontented, really, because the boss of the firm started me, and the son started another apprentice a few months later, and I felt I was getting the raw end of the deal. I must have been a better hand carter than the other lad, because I was asked to do most of it. But I didn't grumble about it. You didn't complain to the bosses in those days, because you had to work the week to get your money. So I then went to Broadbent's of Southport, quite a well-known store, and served an apprenticeship in upholstering, which I carried on until I was 19 years of age, when I was called up for the army.
Had you joined TA before the war?
No, I didn't join the TA, but I've always been... My father was a soldier. My father was a private in the King's Liverpool Regiment, and he was awarded the 1914-15 star, so he was in France, I think, in France early 15. He did join up in 1914, and he was only 16 years of age. And his army records, if anyone wants to look up, his age was always 2 years older than what his natural age was. And he served with them for... I think 2.5 years in France. He was wounded and shell-shocked, and I think he came out in 1917 sometime. And the story is, absolutely true, because my father never told lies. After being in military hospital for quite some time, he was discharged, and he got home, and my grandmother's or his mother's house was at 125 Kew Road. He got home one afternoon. And do you know what happened the next morning? My grandmother, his mother, woke him up, and the words were, "You'd better go and look for work, son." So he didn't have much of a leave when he got back. But that's how hard times were in those days, and you just had to work for a living. There was no free handouts. He never got a pension, although he had been badly knocked about in France. So the army, with me, I always liked the army, so I joined the cadets when I was 14. I was made a lance corporal, and it was a branch of the Royal Army Service Corps, which the TA battalion was in Southport, the headquarters. So the cadets were part of that unit. We didn't do anything with motor cars. We were basically trained in infantry work and that sort of thing, which I enjoyed. But as I got older, I think I left that when I was about 16. And, of course, the war was just coming on, And when the war started, I was went back to joinery because they were building Woodvale Aerodrome, and of course there was not much work in upholstery in days in just as the war was starting. So I went back to joinery and helped to build Woodvale Aerodrome, which is just outside Southport, 3 or 4 or 5 miles from where I live at the moment. And I enjoyed that. And eventually, the Home Guard, I think it was not the Home Guard to start with, it was the LDV, the Local Defence Volunteers, and I actually volunteered at Birkdale Town Hall on the first day. And Birkdale Town Hall isn't above 100 yards from where I'm sitting at this moment in my own little home here in Birkdale. And I served in that for quite some time. And eventually...
What kind of experiences did you have?
Experiences, just on guard, doing guard duty, patrolling... out at nights, all night sometimes, on guard, before, on and two off, and watching the bombs and the aeroplanes, hearing the aeroplanes bombing Liverpool very badly and things of that nature. But we never came in contact with the enemy at all, and it was quite a something for a young lad. And don't forget, you had to do your day's work the next day. So, yes, it was quite a tiring job, but as I say, I did enjoy the army.
Did any bombs fall in Birkdale, Southport?
Yes, quite a number of bombs. The first bomb that fell in this area fell just by Woodvale Aerodrome. It was a petrol, a garage in those days. You didn't call them petrol stations. And it hit it plumb, which would be just half a mile from the aerodrome. And that was the only bomb that, the first bomb that dropped. And then the next bomb, I remember, dropped at the corner of St Luke's Road and Hartwood Road, which is about a good mile and a half from here. The odd landmine, I believe, but I was in the army at this time, dropped in Birkdale. But nothing really serious happened in Birkdale. We were quite lucky, really.
And then what happened after LDV?
Oh, well, then, as I say, I was working at Woodvale Aerodrome. That sort of closed down. And then I went doing bomb work in repairing bomb damaged property in Birkenhead. And I remember going there, and the train, the Liverpool, Southport Liverpool train, used to terminate at Bank Hall, and then we were bussed from Bank Hall into Liverpool to catch the underground train to take us to Birkenhead. That lasted about 3 or 4 months, and then I was called up into the proper army on the 15th of January 1942.
How did you feel about it?
Well, like a lot of young fellas, I wasn't really worried about leaving home. I thought I'd make a good short soldier and do my duty, and that's the way we were in those days. And yes, off I went, and it was a very, very bitter cold day. And we got the train from Southport, and I know one station we called at, we stopped at, was Peterborough. But I didn't know much about the country because in those days you didn't travel a lot, you know. Nobody had a motor car and you didn't go very far on your holidays. And, I got to Bacton eventually, and we're billeted in, it was called a holiday camp, but it was far from a holiday camp. It was a type of camp or wooden huts where they would perhaps keep chickens today, but certainly not human beings. And it was bitterly cold. There was about 15 inches of snow on the ground, and little paths that they'd made to each hut, about half a dozen or a dozen men to each hut. And that was my first day in the army. I think we had a medical that gone midnight, so it was tough. And
did you say that was Clacton?
Bacton in Norfolk, on the Norfolk coast, near Cromer, Sheringham area, Cromer area. And I had a Burton's £3 suit on, and the wind whistled right through it, and I think we're about 3 or 4 days before we were issued with uniforms. So it was a tough time, really. And I was a soldier, luckily, I think. Never went into barracks for basic training. We did the basic training with the 7th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment, and we were called X Company. And I think I might be right, when about 159 Lancashire boys, all from Liverpool, Southport, two of us from Southport, Bolton, Accrington, Burnley, Bacup, all that area, and we went to make up the strength of the 7th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment.
What was the basic training like?
It was not, I wouldn't say it was pretty hard. It was, in those days, all the young lads, we were only basically working men, and we'd all been used to hard graft, so it didn't really take much out of us. Perhaps one of the worst things that I recall was getting up every morning at 6 or 7 o'clock and no heating, and stripping off for PT in the cold Norfolk weather. I don't know anybody's experienced Norfolk in winter time. When the east winds come off the North Sea, it's very, very, very cold. But we got used to it.
Were you treated reasonably or unreasonably?
I think we were treated reasonably well. The food was nothing to write home about, but I've always been very fussy about food, and I don't like fat on my meat and things like that. But I got used to it. I didn't lose weight, and I thought I was a pretty reasonable soldier.
Were you able to do the things they wanted you to do?
Yes, I never jibbed at anything at all. No, anything I was asked to do, I did. And I think I'd been in there with the Norfolks. We'd gone into a company by this time. We did, I think, 6 or 8 weeks basic training with this X Company. And then we were put in companies, and I was always with B Company. And luckily, I was promoted to a Lance Corporal. Unpaid, of course, which meant you did a lot more work, but it was the start of promotion, and I was quite pleased about that.
Where were you by now?
We were still round in Bacton, in that area, and we moved about on exercises and things, but basically at this camp at Bacton.
Were you happy to have the responsibilities of Lance Corporal?
Oh, yes, yes, I didn't mind. I've never been afraid of giving orders in a nice way. And then it wasn't long after that that I was promoted to corporal and eventually attained the rank of war substantive corporal, which means I think you've got to have your corporal's rank at 9 or 12 months without any misdemeanours. And you can't then be busted unless by a court martial. So I was quite proud about that as well. And from Bacton, we went over to Northern Ireland, which wasn't very nice at all. Although there was no trouble in those days, we still had to, although we were a fighting infantry battalion, we still had to chain our rifles up in the armoury each night. Takes a bit of believing, but that's what we had to do. But the guards, of course, they kept the rifles when they were on guard duty. But it always struck me as funny that we had to lock our rifles up at night in the armoury.
Why was it not so nice in Northern Ireland?
Well, for one of the things why it wasn't very nice here, it never stopped raining. It rained every day. In fact, we were there nearly 12 months, and I believe the year we were there, they had the record number of dry days in the year, and I think it was about 17. So it was always wet and clammy, and we were on training, we were up in the mountains of Mourne, we were on the Loch Ney, Loch Ney, I think, landing exercises and that sort of thing. And another thing about the army, the pay wasn't very good either, so you didn't have a lot of money to spare. And that was Northern Ireland.
So this was the 7th Norfolk?
Pardon?
This was the 7th Battalion of the Norfolk?
7th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment, yeah. I think we're in the Staffordshire Division, the 59th Staffordshire Division, and I think we're a part of 12 Corps, and I think two battalions of the Staffordshire Regiment were in our brigade. So we did an awful lot of exercises. Invariably we got lost, or the ration truck got lost, and but it was okay. We managed.
Any contact with the population in Northern
Ireland? Yes, we just went out. We went out to the odd cafe and had the special food, which is bacon and sausages and fried bread and that sort of thing. Yeah, that was all right. And didn't drink in those days, perhaps the odd beer, but very little, very little. And then eventually we left. I used to get pulled over the coals for walking out with a friend of mine, a lad called Harry Bradley from Bacup. He was a private, and I was told on a number of occasions that he hadn't got to, well, I certainly hadn't got to walk out with him, but I did carry on doing that. And Harry, unfortunately, was sent away from that battalion, and he eventually made corporal himself, and he got killed on the 13th of April 1945, a few days before, well, the fighting had more or less finished by that time, and it was a very sad occasion for me when I came home, and the first question I asked my parents was, how's Harry? And unfortunately they had to tell me that he'd been killed not long before.
So was he sent away from the battalion because of his friendship with
you? No, well, I'm jumping over. I was just mentioning Harry there because of walking out with him. But the 7th Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment didn't land in Normandy until... Because I'd left the Norfolk Regiment by this time, of course. And they landed in Normandy, I think, middle of July, and they saw some very, very severe action. I think it was the Odon, I think, that they were involved in, and they had a very, very severe losses, so perhaps if I'd have stayed with them, I'd be one of the losses. But the battalion was eventually split up, or disbanded, I think they call it in the army. In fact, the division was split up or disbanded, and on the 22nd of August, so you can have an idea of how they suffered, that division, and certainly the brigade that the Royal Norfolks were in. And Harry was sent to the Durham Light Infantry, so the few survivors were sent to different regiments.
Now, to come back to the chronology, you're in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
Can you tell me what you remember happening next, please?
What was what?
What you remember happening next?
Well, nothing really. Nothing untoward. Just training. That's about all we did, training. By this time, I'd been on a course, and I was a small arm instructor, which... I instructed the company on small arms and the Bren and various armaments that we had. And also I'd been on a mines course, and I used to instruct, the battalion on various German mines, the Teller mine and the anti-personnel mines, and things that we knew about, and how to clear minefields and tapes and whatnot. So any soldiers listening to this, they'll know what I'm talking about when I talk about tapes and prodding for mines, a very dangerous occupation if there was one.
And then?
And then we left Northern Ireland after being there nearly 12 months. And I'll never forget, I was the guard commander on that night. And it was my duty in the morning. We'd moved from where we were, and we were put up in billeted in a large hotel at the name of the Larne. We were sailing from Larne to Stranraer, and it was my duty to be on parade with my baggage party at the docks on early morning, I don't know exactly time, 6 or 7 o'clock, to get the baggage on before we sailed about noon. And unfortunately, being in this hotel, I couldn't find all the guys that were on the baggage party, so I had to detail one or two others, and they weren't too happy about it. And I eventually marched the baggage party down to the docks and loaded all the baggage well in time, hours before we sailed. But the RSM was about, and he never said a word. So as we're sailing back, I'm walking down around the deck of this ship, and just enjoying myself and thinking how nice it would be to be happy going back to England. And the RSM called me over and told me I was on a charge for being late on parade with the baggage party. Now, I'd got a, eventually, after about 3 or 4 months, I'm brought up on this charge. And of course, an RSM's charge, you go before your CO, but then you've got to go before, go in front of your company commander, who says he's very sorry, but he's got to refer it to the CO. And I went in front of the CO, and he gave me a severe admonishment, or I think, is it admonishment? No, some word like that. Severe reprimand, and that was all I got. And eventually we got off the boat and we went down then to a place in Kent, and I thought it was wonderful. A place called Hawkhurst in Kent. And we were under canvas and it was really super. Lots more exercises and nothing really serious happened. One nice thing did happen. We went on the firing range one day, and I don't know, I didn't really recall that it was a competition, but of course all your scores are recorded when you go in the butts. And about a month later, I'm on CO's orders, not knowing what it was for, but certainly not on a charge. And he called me in, stood up when I went in, shook my hand and said I'd done the battalion great credit, as I'd won this shooting competition. Now I got £5, which was quite a large sum of money in those days, and I was quite proud of that fact. I thought I was going to be a captain any time, but no, I didn't get any more promotion for shooting. Another incident I had there. I was guard commander. And it was not easy being a guard commander there because we were under canvas, and the guard house was surrounded by dannet wire, barbed wire, and I had two very, very, very nasty prisoners, and they threatened to escape that night, but unfortunately we kept a close eye on them and they didn't, but they went the next night. And then a few weeks later they were recaptured, and I had the by this time I'm hardly 20. And I'm detailed to take these two prisoners to Dover Castle. Handcuffs, never experienced anything like it in my life. But we got them there, and it was a relief to get rid of them because they were two quite nasty individuals. They were real tough guys. And I was only a little fella, but I had two stripes on my arm that gives you a little bit of protection, and we got them there, but it was a bit hairy, but we made it.
What had they done?
Pardon?
What had they done?
Oh, I don't know, just absconded or just absent without leave and being nasty to NCOs and officers and things like that, as some men are. Some can't take army discipline, and no matter what you do to them, they'll never alter. And then we went to a tour of one or two places in Kent, like, let me think, Margate, Ramsgate, one or two places like that, Herne Bay. And while we were in Ramsgate, the notice came on the battalion orders that they wanted volunteers for the commando. So perhaps I shouldn't really say this, but I'd been on these exercises a number of times with the Royal Norfolk Regiment. I don't know whether things seem to go wrong somehow. We always seem to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so I put my name down as a volunteer. And it seems if you put your name down from a on a general order, your name must go through to the CO. And eventually I'm called in front of the CO, and his name was Lieutenant Colonel Long. And he finished up as a general, because I've read it in print that he finished up as a general this year. And he asked me why I wanted to join the commandos. And I said, well, I feel as though the second front, well, the invasion of France will be coming up any time. And I didn't feel too confident about our chances. Well, he went mad. He went mad, as you can well imagine. I must have been pretty tough to say that. I wasn't being nasty. I mean, some of the lads were great, but I don't know what it was. It had to be, I think. And anyway, he gave me 2 hours to think it over, and I went up. I was marched up again 2 hours later and said, yes, I still wanted to go. But he told me I was due for promotion, and the battalion had trained me for all this time, and he was reluctant to let me go, but it had to be. So eventually, it would be by this time, what, January 1944, and I'm off to Achnacarry in Scotland for this commando training. Oh, no, I'm skipping. I'm called to an interview. I go for this interview and a medical. I forget where it was now. It couldn't be far away from where we were, somewhere in Kent. And there were three officers saw the doctor first, and the three officers were there. I think one was a colonel, lieutenant colonel, and what the others were, I don't know. But I had my medical, and I'm taken into the interviewing panel. And the chairman got up, shook my hand, thanked me for volunteering for the commandos, but they couldn't accept me. So I said, why not, sir? He said, you've got varicose veins, and on the medical report, we can't have you. So I thought, how can I go back to the battalion? I can't go back. I can't possibly go back. So I told him the truth. I said, well, sir, I've been in the infantry now over 2 years. Whatever I've been asked to do, I've done. I've been promoted to more substantive corporal. And anything you ask me to do, I will do. And they had a bit of a conflab, and they said, well, that's the spirit we want. So they accepted me. But I couldn't have gone back. I'd have been a private soldier and thrown in clink, I think, if I'd have gone back. No, I don't think that would have happened, but I didn't relish going back. And anyway, I was accepted. And off we went up to Achnacarry near Fort William in Scotland. Beautiful place. We were all day on the train, and it was most uncomfortable. But we got there. We'd volunteered, and if you volunteer for anything, you've got to put up with it. No use complaining. And we got off at a station called Speenbridge. Now, some of you know what full service marching order is, but I think the full field service marching order is your big pack, your small pack, pouches and your rifle and whatnot. But also on top of that, we had our kit bag, which can weigh quite heavy if you're one of these soldiers that save things. And we got off a train at a station called Speenbridge, and we asked how far it was to Achnacarry, and we were told about 2 miles. Well, when I tell you it's been measured since, I've measured it in my car, and it was 7 miles, and it was a tough 7 miles. And as we entered the gate, there was this place of Achnacarry. There was gravestones here and there. This man went through a gap in a hedgerow. This man lifted his head. This man trod on a mine, and all this sort of thing, just to make you aware of that you were in the real army now. But they were all great guys. There was no discipline as such. The instructors were excellent. The discipline was that if you didn't toe the line, if you dropped out of anything, straight back to your unit. So nobody wanted that. And I think most of us made it. And eventually, after 6 weeks, we were